everybody, and welcome back to Spook Me. I'm Nicole.
I'm Emma.
And, oh, do you like our new intro song?
I was just thinking that.
Oh my gosh, I forgot for a second. How exciting. Anyway, yeah, I'm very excited about it. And if you want to make your own jingle for no reason, I'll put the link in our bio. So check it out, because it's pretty cool. I'm excited about this episode.
Me too.
But what else is new? But I really am. And, oh, thank you to my friend Kaylin for suggesting it a long time ago. I mean, we were thinking about it anyway, but I appreciate the little bump because I definitely, it definitely would have just passed by me. But, yeah, I'm very excited because today we are going to be diving into the case of what some people say is the most haunted house in America. Not like fun haunted house.
Like, oh, by the way, legit haunted.
I've never gone to a haunted house.
Really?
Literally never in my life.
All right. Well, that's what we're going to be doing this fall. Actually, there's Corona. I don't know if that will be a thing.
Well, you never know. Maybe we'll, maybe.
Maybe.
You never know.
We'll see.
We'll see.
I love haunted houses.
Really?
Yes, I do.
You know what I don't like? And I also haven't gone in one of these. The haunted corn maze, like that.
Oh my God. Corn mazes? I don't know if I could handle that because it's just such a vast, like,
I get anxiety in regular mazes.
Yeah, like, same. I don't need
even if it's not demons a haunted
popping
one
out at me.
I've gone to like a regular corn maze with like Girl Scouts one time. But I don't need like, and I got scared then. And I was like, because all my friends, they weren't really my friends in Girl Scouts. Like, so like they just would leave me behind.
That is a mood.
Anyway, I hope they're not listening. Maybe they are. We'll see. But but anyway, oh, I forgot to mention, guys, this is a big deal. Our very, very first podcast, 66 listens, you guys.
We're moving that on up.
That is insane. And we have let me look it up. I'm looking at the screen right now. It's not loading. We have 587 total plays.
Wow.
That's so cool. Thank you, you guys.
Thank you.
Very exciting for us. Anyway, now that I've done the introduction and then completely skipped over it, back to haunted houses. We are going to be talking about the Sally House today. Oh, boy, oh, boy. I know a lot of people know this case, but you might not know everything. So don't get too cocky, everybody. Please.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I know like some stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that I have no idea about. So this is going to be a good one. Also, can I just say, I don't know what that was. But the way I learned about this case in the first place was when Ghost Adventures, of course, went to the house and investigated it. And I was horrified for like a week because it was so frightening to me.
I learned about this from BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Oh, yes. That too. But they don't take everything seriously.
I know. It was more like, just like a little fun trip to the house.
But it would be like if we investigated something.
Truly.
Which we should do, but not the Sally House. Hell no.
No, I wouldn't do that. Nope.
Neither. Maybe if you paid me. Maybe if I was paid to do it, I would, but not for fun.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
But let's get into the background so we can get familiar with the case here. In Atchison, Kansas, in the mid-1800s, a new house was built in the growing community. 508 North 2nd Street has seen its fair share of occupants over the years, but it grabbed local and national attention in 1993 when a young family moved in and began experiencing some seriously horrific things. I don't know why I had to emphasize that because it's horrifying. On December 31st, 1992, that really just got excited about that. Tony and Deborah Pickman, a recently married couple, moved into the house hoping to start their family. Both Tony and Deborah grew up in devout Catholic homes and carried their religion into adulthood. I want you to know how long it took me to decipher what devout was when I read it. Like, I just didn't know what that word was when I looked at it. I absolutely know what that means and just did not know what it meant when I looked at it. Okay.
That's great. It's great. It's okay.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. The couple moved into the small and unassuming house with no knowledge of any stories or legends about the house. As the couple unpacked and got settled into their home, things were quiet. However, looking back now, Deborah says a few weeks after moving in, small and easily explainable things started to happen. She wonders how much had gone unnoticed in those early days of living in the house. Some of the first strange occurrences that were noticed involved their pets. Oh, no.
It's okay. They're okay. Actually, no, they're not okay.
Okay, great.
But I actually didn't put that in here, so I'll just bring it up later.
Okay. Their dog, who was always very friendly and quiet, was now fiercely barking at the door of the nursery room. Ew! Okay, already gross. Already gross. Which, this went on for 7 to 10 days. Their cats were always chasing something above them with their eyes. My dog does this, you know. Ew. She, like, will look above me. Like, always just, like, right above me. And I'm like, who's there? Who is it? And they would often frantically do this for long periods of time. These things occurred between January and July of 1993, so it was a long time. Another thing the couple experienced during this time was electrical disturbances, which, of course, as we know, this is very common, with ghosties. The couple would often hear the stove or microwave ding on its own. Oh my god, this is shit that would happen in my apartment. I'm gonna cry.
Literally.
Whew! As if it had just ended a cycle. A ceiling fan with lights was installed in their living room, and Tony and Deborah described times when they would be in the living room watching TV at night, and the lights would dim on their own. This is particularly interesting given the fact that there was no dimmer installed, only an on and off switch. That's awful. They even had an electrician come and inspect the wiring, but there were no problems, and no explanation for why this was happening. Making the situation even more bizarre is that nothing on the same electrical circuit, like the TV or stereo, ever had any problems or glitches. Tony made a comment saying, "Huh, we must have had a ghost in the house." That was a quote, by the way. As a joke. But they would not be laughing for very long after that. Can you imagine making that joke? I mean, I joke about that with my apartment, but maybe I should stop.
Maybe you should stop putting that out there in the universe.
Yeah, because it's going to manifest itself.
Yeah. Deborah and Tony were expecting their first child, and so they set up a beautiful nursery for when their little one arrived. The nursery was a host to a bunch of occurrences, and this will continue for the rest of the case.
I hate that.
It never really is explained why, but it is a hot spot. Deborah described times when she'd be vacuuming in the room and the wind-up mobile, is it mobile or mobile, like mobile?
I think it's mobile.
You mobile? Know, the thing above the crib that like hangs it down. Well, anyways, that thing would go off by itself and play music.
I would pee myself.
Really, that's really creepy because you have to like wind it up to do it. You know what I mean? Ugh. Many other electronic toys would also play by themselves and they would emit sounds, hums, and even, quote, distant sounding voices, which is really scary.
Oh my gosh, when I used to babysit that kid, they had a baby monitor and I was always so scared that I was gonna hear some like demon voice.
Baby monitors scare the shit out of me. Like, I don't know.
Me too. It's the you know, lately I've been sleeping with like a fan noise on my phone. Mm-hmm. And I'm so afraid that like I'm gonna channel something into my room.
Ew.
Oh god.
Once their son was born, he would have a very hard time sleeping in his nursery. Deborah explains that no matter if he had his diaper changed, eaten, or had been cuddled, nothing kept him asleep. She says that he would wake up several times a night as if someone or something had disturbed him or tried to play with him.
Oh god, I hate that.
As new parents, they did not know at the time that this was pretty out of the ordinary. Like, babies do wake up in the middle of the night, but not, like, 10 times a night like he was.
Right.
In a casual conversation with a neighbor, Deborah was asked why she kept the nursery light on all night, which was to her surprise. Deborah told her neighbor, Carol, that their son, Taylor, was sleeping in their room because of his trouble sleeping, and assured her that there was no light on, but Carol was adamant. There was a stretch of a few weeks where the family noticed mold growing in all sorts of strange places, such as Tupperware containers in the cupboards, fresh dog food in the bowl, and even the refrigerator magnets.
That's weird.
That is so weird, and I've never heard of, like, mold growing in paranormal cases.
Yeah, that is like,
it's just weird, like where the mold was growing, like food. Yeah, like food that they magnets? Had just right. Yeah, like food that they had just put out in the bowl. Like an hour later, they said it would have mold on it or something.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if there's a tapping. I don't know what that is down here.
I don't hear anything.
Okay, that's horrifying. Anyway, let's just continue and pretend I don't hear it.
Okay. Taylor's sleeping habits were getting even worse, waking up every hour on the dot. So Deborah's sister Karen flew in to help the young parents with the baby. For 5 days, Karen helped out with the baby and let Tony and Deborah relax a little bit. On Karen's last day in Kansas, July 14th, 1993, the event that pushed the family over the edge occurred. That day, the family had spent time with Tony's side of the family, and his sister Jeannie came to him and Deborah with a guilty look on her face. A few weeks earlier, she had promised to drop off a high chair she had, and early on that day, she went to drop it off. No one was home, and Jeannie was curious to see if the nursery was finished, so she let herself in and took a peek. Deborah assured her that it was no big deal and that she didn't mind if she had let herself in, but she was curious as to why she felt so guilty about it. After Tony, Deborah, Karen, and baby Taylor returned home at around 10 p.m. that night, Tony noticed a very strange sight in the nursery. All of the stuffed animals had been placed in a circle in the middle of the room with their backs together facing forward. This kills me. Like, kills me.
Oh my God. I told you about that time when I had meticulously placed all my Beanie Babies in my room and then accidentally saw Chucky when my sister was watching and then threw all of them in the hall.
Yep.
That reminds me of that, and that is exactly why I did not keep them in my room that night, because that exact same thing would have happened. Everybody,
toys are just scary.
Oh God, ew, ew.
Confused, Tony asked Deborah why she arranged the toys that way, but she had no idea what he was talking about. The three adults went into the nursery and stood there in disbelief, waiting for someone to admit they had done it as a prank, but no one ever did. Deborah specifically recalled in her diary that she had placed the animals in various places in the room, like on the rocking chair or on a shelf or in the crib. Their first thought was that Jeannie had done it as some prank, but playing a prank like this couldn't be more out of her nature. Deborah called Jeannie and, not trying to be rude, thanked her for the high chair and engaged in some small talk. Deborah said, quote, "Hey Jeannie, I have a really weird question to ask you about the nursery." She asked her if she had noticed anything strange when she went in there, to which Jeannie replied, "No." And then asked her if she had moved any of the stuffed animals, to which she again replied, "No." Just as confused as Deborah, Jeannie explained that everything was perfect in the nursery when she saw it and that she hadn't touched anything. She went on to explain that the reason she felt guilty was because as soon as she stepped in the house, she had a weird and unsettling feeling, which got much worse when she went into the nursery. She described this feeling as incredibly overwhelming, so much so that she had to leave the house immediately.
Oh, God.
Which is, like, really weird. Like, I guess it's weird that she would feel guilty about that. Maybe she feels like that was, like, her guilt saying she shouldn't have, like, let herself in the house.
Maybe.
Like, maybe that's why she thought she was getting the feeling, you know what I mean?
Right. It's all very, I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's interesting that they all, like, experienced the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that makes it equally as horrifying, honestly.
Right.
That's very interesting. I don't understand the guilty part completely.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just, like, what whatever paranormal thing was in there made her feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It was just, like, I don't know. That's so weird.
Yeah. I think what I have concluded is that she got a weird feeling when she came in, and she was like, and just attributed that to like going in the house without anyone there. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like she felt weird to be in the house, like after she let herself in.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. I guess that's interesting. So I don't know. I had to yell. With no explanation of how the toys got into the weird formation, Deborah felt the only way this could have happened was a ghost, which I also would have come to that conclusion.
Same.
I would have said it was a demon. She's doing better than I did. Gripped with curiosity and denial, the three adults came to the conclusion that it must have been Tony's brother, Greg, who was playing the trick on them. As they all left the room, Tony turned off the light and they headed downstairs. Karen noticed immediately that the light had come back on, but Tony insisted he turned it off. After realizing it couldn't have been Greg, they discussed the possibility of a child ghost playing with the toy. Or perhaps a mother ghost who wanted to care for a child. Later that night, Deborah bravely ventured upstairs to use the bathroom as Tony and Karen anxiously waited at the bottom of the steps. Me.
It was like they were like watching her to make sure nothing happened.
Right. Deborah reluctantly peeked into the nursery and was met with horror. The bear they had just placed in the wicker chair was once again lying flat in the middle of the floor. Maybe that's not what it was, but maybe that is. Guys.
It's scary.
Yeah, it's horrifying. I don't ever want that to happen. This is what made them call a psychic, who was named Barbara. Hi, Barb. She said, for now, to reprimand the spirit and claim dominance until she was able to come to the house a few days later. This can either go really well sometimes or it goes really badly.
Yeah.
Barbara Connor was a local psychic who had been known to the family. She came to visit the house and described communicating with a young girl who liked to be called Sally. Dun, dun, dun. After some time of communicating, Barbara described Sally as a 7-year-old girl with a pain in her abdomen and hand, as well as a toothache. Sally told Barbara that she didn't like Deborah because she was too bossy. Same. This would be because Deborah began reprimanding once all the strange things started to happen. But Barbara assured Deborah that all children, even ghosts, need to be disciplined. It's like Matilda.
I know. I thought that was pretty silly.
That is funny. She suggested that they be, quote, patient but firm, end quote, with Sally, just as you would be with any 7-year-old girl. Or 7-year-old. Child. I didn't specify. It was suggested that if Sally had a few things of her own, that she might leave their belongings alone. So, they offered Sally a doll, to which Barbara replied in a childlike voice, quote, well, all right, end quote.
Yeah, she, like, used to... Like, she would speak as Sally a lot.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. That's horrifying, but I get it.
Yeah.
In other visits, Barbara said that she was warming up to Deborah because she was the quote-unquote mommy figure and that Sally was the baby's protector. Aw. Barbara even suggested that they not leave Taylor in a swing or to play because, just as with real children, they might not realize how fragile a baby is and could hurt them. It was like Deborah and Tony were treating Sally like their own flesh and blood child, which I guess is a good thing, but it's also kind of scary, you know? Yeah. Even though Tony was very apprehensive about talking to Sally and treating her this way, one night he had a very vivid dream about a young girl in a blue dress with chestnut hair sitting with a boy against a tree, and he drew her portrait the next day. Barbara told them that appearing in dreams and all of the other occurrences like the electricity, mold, smells, and sounds were all from Sally, trying to get their attention and to communicate with them. One thing that's very interesting is that Barbara told Deborah that Sally liked to go up and down the stairs with her, which explained the cold feeling that Deborah felt on her left side when using the stairs. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Tony took a photo of Deborah on the stairs, and a large mass on Deborah's left side was there. Creepy. Sally, you creepy little fucker.
They took so many photos, and a lot of them are on thesallyhouse.com, which is the Pickman's blog.
Yeah, so. I've seen one of them that's, like, a picture of the nursery, I think, and mm-hmm. there's this, like, black thing in front of it.
Yeah.
But then, like, the next picture is completely, like, fine. I think I've seen that one.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of those, like, ones
I
like
love
that.
I think people should do that more often, like, take a bunch of pictures.
Yeah.
When something like this happens, because you never know, like, if you're going to catch something in it, you know?
Yeah, Deborah kept a diary, like, of all the experiences they had. So that's why there's so much information.
I also just realized that my mother has left and my father is away, and I'm alone in my basement.
Well, I'm here with you, so you're not alone.
Oh, good.
After Barbara's visits, the family tried to go on with their life as normal. For weeks at a time, there would be no occurrences, with the exception of a TV or light glitch here and there. There were other times when candles would be completely melted, or pictures that were hung on the wall would be turned upside down, and strange masses and orbs in photos taken by the family. In September of 93, they got Sally some welcoming gifts, one being a baby doll. Deborah left the box unopened in Sally's corner of the nursery, thinking she may want to unwrap it herself. It sat untouched for weeks, until one day while in the nursery, Deborah saw that the baby doll was now sat in the crib unwrapped. Even weirder was that the box appeared to be sealed and untouched, but now it was empty.
Oh, no.
That is super creepy to think
of. That is very, very creepy.
On the morning of October 31st, 1993, ready for work, he was in the cupboard getting a cup. And as he turned around, he dropped his glass in horror and shock. Right before his eyes, he saw a little girl, which he described as, quote, as real looking as you and me, end quote, standing in the kitchen.
Ew.
He said, yeah, super creepy. He said she was innocent and sweet-looking, wearing a fancy lace dress, and her brown hair was tied with a bow. After he dropped the glass, he instinctively looked down at it, but by the time he lifted his head, the girl was gone.
Okay, literally, I've been thinking about this a lot lately for some reason, and the fact that this is in this episode is really freaky to me. But I've been thinking, like, I get home really, really late from work now, and I always get freaked out just because it's completely dark, you know, in my house. And yeah. I'm like, what if one day, like, I turn around and there's, like, somebody there? Like, what will I do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what, how do I go about that situation?
It's funny because Deborah said, like, I think it was when they saw the bear on the ground for the second time, like, the amount of fear that, like, came over all of them, like, they just stood there.
Oh, God.
You know, like, I feel like yeah. that would happen to me. Like, I would just be paralyzed with fear.
I mean, that one time, the one time I felt true fear was with that skunk with James. And I ran. So maybe I'll run. Like, maybe
that's
I'll
so
leave.
Funny. Fight or
I don't
flight.
Know. Yeah, truly. Although, like, I definitely am a fight kind of girl, too.
I guess it depends on the situation.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
Maybe one day. Christ.
The family had a Christmas party that year, and Deborah recalls thinking how sad it must be for spirit children to watch other kids get gifts but not get any themselves. Me. As everyone was leaving the party, one of Tony's brothers went upstairs to get everyone's coats out of the master bedroom. As he went up the stairs, he quickly noticed smoke and saw that a small mop head doll was on fire on the carpeted stairs.
Ugh.
I don't know what a mop head doll is.
It means, like, Raggedy Ann, like, kind of a Raggedy Ann doll.
Oh, ew, even worse.
Like that kind of hair, you know, that, like, yeah. stringy, gross
like the
hair.
The yarn hair?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They thought this must be Sally's way of showing her disappointment with not receiving any gifts.
Sally, don't throw a fit.
I know. Deborah scolded Sally and made sure she knew that that was not okay and very dangerous. But her and Tony decided to get an oil lamp where she could set fires in a controlled environment, which is really bizarre. Like, really weird to me.
Just take away the fire element altogether. Don't That's, give yeah. her fire. Christ.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
The next day, Santa came bearing gifts. And Same. By Santa, I mean a neighborhood Santa arranged by the parents. Just to make that clear. And minutes after he entered the house, his eyes became wide, and Deborah turned around to see thick black smoke behind her. It was the lamp that was now set on fire all by itself.
Like, literally, this is what we just talked about, Sally. Can you just relax?
No, like, it was, Deborah was pleased because she was listening, because she put the fire, like, in the oil lamp, so it wasn't, it wasn't like a blazing fire that was, like, uncontrolled, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know why it was thick black smoke, if it's just an oil lamp.
I don't know, maybe that's how oil lamps burn? Is
Maybe.
It? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Oh, speaking of candles, I bought a chakra candle, you guys. And I bought it, so it's one that I bought it because it said that it was going to help open my third eye and my, like, psyche and stuff. And I was like, yes.
Love that.
Because I was, like, trying to decide which, like, chakra candle I wanted. And I was like, that is it. That is what I want. But I'm also kind of afraid to burn it because, especially in my apartment, because I'm like, what if I, like, contact a spirit? Like,
oh my gosh.
What am I going to do?
After some time had passed, Tony wasn't acknowledging Sally as much. And one day he was laying on the couch when he felt a pain in his leg. And he looked to see that there was a bite mark on the back of his thigh that looked like to be the size of a child's mouth.
Ew, I hate that.
That's so gross and creepy.
Oh my God, you want to know something creepy?
Yeah.
So I had to refill the ice bucket at work the other day, mm-hmm. and they're, like, ridiculously heavy, and, like, I could barely carry it, because, of course, that's the job for me. And I, like, had to carry it a weird way, and now I have all these bruises on my arms, but it legit looks like fingerprints. Like, I'm not even joking you. I will send you pictures later. It's horrifying.
Ew, and it's that's like, really scary.
It's really scary, and I'm afraid, like, people are gonna think I was, like, attacked.
Oh my god, like, bruises that are fingerprints are so fucking, like, scary to me. It's so scary that that can happen.
I know. Ew. I can't, oh my god, I have to send you pictures later. It's really bad. And they, I don't even know how they appeared this way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have bruises everywhere. It's, like, awful. I don't even know what happened. It was around this time, the fall of 93, when the family agreed to do an episode of sightings on the case. Over the next 2 years, violence against Tony gradually worsened. With some of these events captured on camera, Tony would be suddenly bloody and covered in marks and burn marks, and even knocked backwards and seemingly pinned to the ground. After these 2 years of filming episodes with the crew of sightings, they had enough of the violence and moved out. About a decade later, they returned with paranormal investigators and had a few visits without incident. However, during one particular visit, Tony was assaulted again, perhaps the most severe of all. Deborah describes the encounter, quote, "Tony was brutally attacked only minutes later, being lifted and thrown 4 feet backwards into a door and unable to get up because a force was holding him down. It was only in the words, 'In the name of God, let him go,' that enabled him to get back on his feet to flee the house in its grip. We fled the house so fast that we didn't notice the damage that the door hitting the wall had done, but contacted the owner to let him know what had happened," end quote. That is so horrifying. I can't even imagine. I can't imagine, like, being the person that had that happen to me, or being, like, the person that witnessed it.
Right.
Since then, over the past decades, several different TV shows and movies have since been released on the Sally House. The new owners of the home say there was a pentagram painted on the basement floor when they first arrived, which has since been painted over. But now we have to ask the question, what is the history of this house, and why the fuck is this all happening?
Exactly.
Well, to start, there is no official record of a Sally living in the house. However, her involvement is speculated in other ways. In 1866, the plot of the land where the house now stands was purchased by Michael C. Finney, and the house was built by 1871, where his family lived. Over the years, there have been several occupants, most of which were members of the Finney family. There have been 4 reported deaths in the home, all of which were natural causes, one being Michael Finney in 1872. The late Michael and his wife's son, Richard, was born in 1873, but died the next year. Sad. The year after that, Michael's wife Kate's father died in the home. In 1918, Michael's daughter Agnes's husband, William True, died in the home after a stroke. Wow, this house really...
I know.
Rough life. The story of Sally varies a lot with different sources, but the main story is that at some point in the late 1800s or early 1900s, Sally was brought to the now infamous home with appendicitis, and the surgeon living there at the time felt the surgery had to be performed immediately and without anesthesia, and she died during the surgery. Obviously, if you don't give her fucking anesthesia. Okay. Anyway. I mean, not obviously, but, like, she was pretty likely to die.
Yeah. And it was, like, in the house, in someone's house. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. That's some American Horror Story shit. Mm-hmm. It's suggested that this is why Sally attacks men, because her surgeon was a man. Some stories say that the owner had an affair with a maid. This is American Horror Story. Guys.
Yeah. It's, like, weird.
And Sally was the result of that affair. While others say Sally was a child who just lived in the neighborhood. Here is a list of other entities that are said to also haunt this home from thoughtcatalog.com. Agnes Finney, a daughter of the couple who owned the house longer than anyone else. Brandon, an easily irritated, quote-unquote, dominant adult male, with a good sense of humor who pranks adults in order to make children laugh. Charles Finney, an older male with an effeminate vocal effect who decades ago competed as an ice skater while dressed as a female. Oh. But also...
That is true. He was a real person like that, actually.
It's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Edith, a senile older woman whom everyone seems to love. Hi, Edith. Frank Jr., a man who died in Kansas City a year after Sally died when his mom botched a suicide attempt that killed him, but that she survived. Wow, that's a true crime story.
Super weird. It actually, I read about that. It was really weird. It was like...
Joanna...
Oh, sorry. She just, like, she tried to like put gas in the house. I think it was like from the stove or something, and like she survived it, but since he was like younger than her, I don't know.
Oh wow. It's weird. That's so weird. Joanna Barnes, a quote-unquote dominant female who lived next door to the Sally house until 1906 and whose ghostly voice was allegedly captured on audio. Paul, a young slave boy who was lynched, awful. It's unclear what his relation is to this house since slavery was over long before the house was built.
Not really. When was the Emancipation Proclamation?
I have no idea. I don't know off the top of my head. Around the time that Abraham Lincoln, 1863.
Obviously. So the house was built like 10 years later.
So clearly Paul would haunt this because he did not get fucking justice. Goodbye, everyone. Ryan, a relative of Sally's who speaks with a quote-unquote slight accent. And Tom Brins, a former Civil War soldier who sometimes appears in the house dressed in his military uniform. So guys, we've got a lot of shit going on here. A lot of folks just walking around. And I can't believe that, like, Sally is the one that's like, what's up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's so interesting to me.
Well, there is probably a reason for that, and I will get to that momentarily.
Great.
So, now what? Deborah Pickman describes the consensus from the psychics as, quote, "It has been said that the negative entity within the house seems to reside in the hole in the back of the basement."
Ew! I'm in my basement!
Which is older than the house. Why is it? She spoke weird. It says, I'll just read it as is. "It has been said that the negative entity within the house seems to reside in hole in the back of the basement is older than the house that it is attached to the land." I'm just gonna, well, we can just decipher that. Okay, continuing on with the quote. "It is surmised that it fears certain strong living energies and attacks them, or that it draws them closer to use the available energy. A psychic once said, regarding a more recent group investigation, that the experiment we were doing in the basement with the tuning forks was bring up human spirits out of the ground beneath us, and that this dark and negative force was significantly angered by this action," end quote.
All right, well,
I don't know why clearly, that was such broken English, but that's, I just copied and pasted that quote from the website.
Interesting. I mean, clearly she's just saying that there's a dark hole that's fucking a portal because of, like, negative forces.
Yeah. Yeah, we can just conclude that.
Right. That's just the conclusion.
It's also worth mentioning that Deborah now believes that Sally was just a facade of a demon and that it was not a young child who died in the house, but rather a demon taking on that identity to get closer to the people living there. Which makes a lot more sense to me, considering the violent behavior and the lack of evidence supporting the idea that there ever even was a Sally.
Yes, I also believe this. And this is what's, like, most famous now.
Yeah. And we know that this is something that happens, i.e. the Annabelle doll.
Yes, and this happens a lot.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Yeah, really, really scary. But not much is known about the house today, but we do know that it was put on the market in 2018 by the owner, and it has since been sold. The house is available for self-guided and guided tours, as well as investigations and overnight stays.
Nope.
People who visit the house now have varying accounts. Some claim to have experienced no paranormal activity at all, while others claim to have been physically harmed by whatever entity is living in the house. So that's pretty much it. And something that's kind of weird is that the sallyhouse.com is like the Pickman blog, and they have been posting stuff for a long time, but they stopped in 2016. They haven't, like, their account of experiences, like, stops in the middle of their time living there, and they haven't posted anything since, which is really weird.
That is weird.
Say this one thing about the cat.
Oh yeah.
So I guess, like, one day, I don't know why I didn't put this in. I should have. But one day, Deborah was doing laundry and she, like, left the dryer door open. Mm-hmm. And, like, the cycle had finished and the clothes were in there. But Tony went to go get the clothes and, like, fold them and whatever. But they were still wet. So he closed it and put it on again.
Oh, no.
And then he was, like, went to vacuum and the vacuum kept turning off. And he was thinking that Sally was just, like, messing with him or something. But he heard, like, thudding, and he went to go look at the dryer, and he took the clothes out, and it was, like, there was all, like, these brown stains on it.
Oh,
and he realized that it was dried blood, and the cat was in there and died.
Oh my god.
So he doesn't know if, like, maybe they were trying, he's like, the vacuum was stopped to get his attention, or like, or if Sally put him, the cat, in there or what, or like if it was just a coincidence. But like, aww, it's really sad and gross.
That's awful.
But yeah.
Oh, poor kitty. That's so sad.
But yeah, let us know what you think. Do you think Sally is real? Is it a demon pretending to be a little girl? Or is it all a big hoax? Also, what do you think, Nicole?
I think that the Sally, like, character did exist. Like, I think maybe that did happen. But I don't think that she's what haunts the house. I think it's this demon, like, just remembering that this girl once died here and was like, I'll just take her name.
Right.
Like, fuck it. You know, and that's what I think. And from the Ghost Adventures episode that I watched, I knew about the pentagram being painted over on the floor. And in that episode, they actually, so they were having an interview with Tony and Deborah. And then Zach, being the instigator that he is, he was like, will you guys come to the house? And he was like, fuck no. And like, it was this big deal. Like, he was like, no, I don't want to go. But then they ended up going, of course. And yeah. So they ended up going back. They didn't stay the night, but they helped with the investigation. But at one point, they brought in a psychic. And she was this, like, 16-year-old girl psychic.
What the hell?
And I was like, in my head, I was like, well, that's probably going to, like, attract more attention to Sally because it's a younger girl.
Right.
And so they go in the basement to where the, like, pentagram was drawn and where they think the portal is and everything. Mm-hmm. And this is the part that, like, really freaked me out. I don't know why it's, like, stays in my head so much from this investigation. But obviously they have so many cameras and everything. And so it was, like, there was the girl, the psychic girl, standing. And then there was Tony and Deborah next to him. And then Zach was in front of them. And they're all just talking. And then all of a sudden, the girl, like, almost faints. Like, she, like, you can see her, like, almost completely collapse.
Ew.
And she, like, they have, but at the same time, Tony, like, feels something on the back of his neck. Like, someone, like, pushed their thumb into the back of his head.
Ew.
And he had a big mark on there. But then, like, they review the footage and, like, her, the girl's hands were, like, nowhere near Tony's, like, head or neck or anything. And it was just, like, the weirdest turn of events. And she was, like, the girl was, like, we need to get out of here. Like, we need to get out of here right now.
No.
Like, she was so, like, freaked out about it. And I was, like, fuck that. I'm horrified about that. But
that's really weird. Okay, what I think is that, like, Sally communicating with Barbara and, like, other people, I think it's a demon. Like,
yeah.
Speaking as Sally, like, I don't know if Sally was even a real person or not, or they just made it up. But so I think there is a demon in there, because that would explain all the violence and stuff.
Yes.
But I also think there must be other, like, spirits that are there.
Oh, yeah. Like, I believe all those other people are there.
Yeah.
Just not as active, maybe.
Right. So, yeah. That's what I think.
I mean, honestly, tell us what you think, because it's kind of, it's, I don't want to say it's up to interpretation, because it's not, but, like, it is a little bit.
I mean, you can take the evidence and accounts with a grain of salt and, you know,
right,
explain them how you want to, if you will.
Exactly. But let us know if you want any other cases done like this. Like, if you have a haunting that you are very interested in or stuff like that. Paige Morin is so funny. She sent that message and she was like, do Lizzie Borden. And I was like, oh my god.
That would be perfect for Nicole, because Nicole,
I know,
loves,
I was gonna
Lizzie
say
Borden.
I think Emma's sick of me talking about Lizzie.
I am not as sick of it, I promise.
But if we're gonna do that, we gotta do it right, and we gotta go and stay at that house.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Because you live so close. I mean, you live pretty close, right?
What is it, Fall River?
Yeah. So, like, hello. We have to. If we're gonna do that, we gotta do it right. We gotta plan a trip. We'll do it.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, once Miss Rona calms down just a little.
Just a little. Relax.
Yeah, and then we can head out and we'll do a little adventure. Maybe we'll vlog it.
That would be fun.
That would be fun. Well, let us know, everyone. And let us know if you want any any certain true crime story, because we're also open to suggestions for that as well. You can send them to our Instagram at SpookMePodcast, or you can send it to our Gmail address. Gmail. I don't know why I said that like that. Which is SpookMePod@gmail.com. Please do. We love to hear it. If you just want to pop in and say hi, hi. But anyway, that's all.
Thank you guys so much for listening. And
yes, thank you.
Talk soon.
Yes. Goodbye.
Bye.
This is our outro song, 'cause we don't have an outro song. We've got ghosts and kills and ghouls and thrills and stories that'll give you chills. But sadly, we don't have an outro song. Bye, I guess.